This is the Head Torch podcast. Welcome. Our mission, to create a mentally healthy culture at work. Keeping the conversations alive, our podcasts bring you great presenters and stimulating discussion on mental health and well-being in the workplace. Enjoy.
For those of you, I think most of you maybe know us, but for those of you that don't, very pleased to meet you. I'm Amy McDonald.
I'm Angus Robinson.
And we have the lovely Nick Lander working in the background. And we also have the fantastic Martin Stepick here today, who I will introduce more fully shortly. For if you haven't noticed, we are recording this session so we can put it out as a podcast later on, and so that other people who might not be able to join us right now can also enjoy it. And so, yeah, for those of you that don't know that much about us, we are Head Torch, and we aim to create cultural change within organisations in terms of creating a mentally healthy culture. So we, when we meet an organisation, we meet them wherever they are at on that journey to create a sustainable mental health culture. And we work with organisations, large and small. We work with senior teams, management and frontline people. Regardless of where people are at, it's all about getting the conversations going, right? It's all about normalizing the conversations around mental health. So very warm welcome to you to this first Thursday wellbeing event. It's the 2nd of December. Can you believe it? And I'm really delighted to have our guest speaker today, who is Martin Stepick, a mindfulness and family business expert, as well as a poet and an artist, and the list goes on and on. The talents of this man. We first met, didn't we, Martin, many moons ago when I did some work with you on to do with family businesses. And since then, Martin's also taken a starring role in one of our online programs as one of our expert speakers. And Martin is an incredible font of knowledge when it comes to mindfulness. And he was delivering live mindfulness sessions pre-COVID. And since COVID, when COVID hit, he then decided, well, I better keep this going online. And so he did. And he delivered two 15-minute sessions every day for 15 months online. That's nearly 900 sessions. Unbelievable. Incredible. I'm in awe. And so Martin's session today is all about keeping a well mind through COVID and in business. And so just before Martin starts to share a little bit of his wisdom with us, I would just want to give you a little bit about the logistics for today's event. So Martin's going to introduce himself with an object of his choice. He'll then share his wise words. After he's finished speaking, he will then pose us a question, and we will then go off into breakout rooms and discuss that question. And then we'll come back together for the final section of the hour, and we can share our thoughts, ask Martin questions, and generally have a good old chit chat around the question that he has posed us. So whilst Martin's talking, if you wouldn't mind, just for the benefit of the film, of the filming or the recording of this event, if you wouldn't mind just switching your cameras off whilst he speaks. So without any further ado, I am going to pass over to you, Martin, if you'd like to just introduce yourself and then from there carry on into your presentation.
Many thanks, Amy, and thank you all for joining us this afternoon, and a huge thanks to Head Torch as well. Do wonderful work, and it's a privilege to be part of this. So as Amy said, I've been doing mindfulness for 23 years, been teaching it for 17, coming on 18 years. And it becomes really the way I try to live my life. And the emphasis is on try, because it's really, really hard to be mindful all the time, because we're swimming against a tide of mental automatic reactionary mindsets. And we're all like that, and we've evolved to be like that. But to begin with, I just want to show my object, and it's very, very, very personal. And I'll just put it up here. So this is a letter from the Second World War, 1940, 22nd of May. And it's from my grandmother to her husband. She's writing it from a Soviet labor camp where she was deported to with my dad, who was 17, and their two sisters, my dad's two sisters, who were 14 and 12 at the time. And those two people who were writing to one another didn't make it through the war. My grandmother died of hunger and starvation. She, one of very few photos we have of her. And this is the gravestone of where she was buried in Tehran. How we got to Tehran, they got to Tehran from Poland via labor camp is way too long a story to share with you, but it was tragic and was a microcosmic example of what happened to my father's family in Poland. 32 relatives in total, 16 of them in labor camps, 6 of them died, and probably about 4 or 5 of them just made it through the skin of their teeth. So this object for me is about remembering when you feel self-pitying, remembering when things are difficult with COVID, that you have no idea how bad it can get, and you should be very, very grateful for what you do have. My dad went 3 years without seeing a pillow, 5 years, I think, without seeing juice or fresh fruit. So this is just a kind of wake-up call to me, this object. And to me, that then leads directly into what I want to talk about. What mindfulness has done for me is to remind me that life is precious and that life only exists in the present moment. And therefore, the present moment is precious. And what do we do then for in this present moment? To me, it is about one of three things. Don't allow any negative to enter into you if you can, regardless of life's circumstances. Stop the negatives that are already in you from getting out and poisoning other people, like say you're in a bad mood or irritable or grumpy. And the third one is try and nurture each moment as best you can. What can you make of a moment for yourself, for others around you? And that can be as simple as something I do every day, which I've just done there. But no, it's so ordinary that nobody notices it's taking a sip of water. Now you think, well, why would you notice a sip of water? Well, it's the most important thing you do in your life. Because if you don't do it, you die within 6 or 7 days. And mindfulness says, notice the everyday things. Notice the tiny little things that we so often take for granted. So, for example, as you all know, I'm speaking to you via some amazing technology that means that we can all be in different places and speak and listen to one another. And we're now so used to it, we don't think about it, and we get annoyed if the signal's not that great. You know, I mean, it was only 30, 40 years ago I was working my way around the world and I couldn't send any messages to my mum because I was in the jungles of Bolivia. Ecuador. And so there was 4 or 5 weeks between us being able to communicate with each other. Nowadays, I could be in the jungle and just say, hi, mum, how are you doing? There's a toucan over there. And we don't notice. We don't notice the wonders around us. I've got an electric lights on. I've got central heating on. This is an astonishing world we're living in. But what happens is the mind gets used to it and then it starts to take it all for granted. So we start to focus more and more on what we don't have and how things should be, rather than what we do have and how much more we have had in our lives than all the rest of humanity or through history. So mindfulness brings us back in moments because we become sharper at noticing what's going on in the moment. Now, COVID is probably the biggest peacetime disaster that's happened to human beings in over 100 years, just over 100 years. And it has been devastating. I have a friend who died. I've had an aunt's funeral, which was restricted to 6 people, and over 100 were wanting to go. But despite all that, we are so much better equipped to handle these things. And the vaccines is just a miracle happening right before our eyes, that we can cope with these things. And the vast majority of people, in reality, in their life, have actually got things relatively comfortable. But because of the way we're used to living and the restrictions being imposed on us, that then penetrates into the mind and starts us thinking that everything's terrible. And we start to worry and get anxious or get frustrated, get ill-tempered. And what mindfulness is notice. Learn to notice, learn to notice, learn to notice. So that you can notice your unhelpful emotions as they arise and you don't suppress them. You notice they're there and you just gently and subtly take the attention elsewhere. Classic example, as many of you, if not all of you, will know, is using the breath. So I can just stop this talk just now because I'm a wee bit tired, and then just single breath. The in-breath, I'm thinking, it's fresh and clear. Clear in my mind, tiredness is going. Breathe back out, feel quiet and peaceful. Okay, I can get back on with things. Now that can be in the middle of an argument and you just realize you're out of sorts mentally. It can be that you're focusing on something, you get distracted by an email or by social media and you see it and you just let it go. Breathe in, breathe out, starting point. Right, okay, moment's important now. What am I going to do with this moment? And this is when we live our life mindfully, what we start to see is there's a cumulative effect of this, where the negatives don't seem to penetrate into you as much. The obvious, inevitable, external ups and downs that happen don't hit you as much. Now, I lost my parents 9 years ago. I lost a sister to cancer. 2.5 years ago, I lost a brother to cancer. In the last 3 years, and I lost 2 aunts that I have loved so dearly. So that's 6 people in 9 years. And what I've found is you can manage grief. You can turn it around. You can turn it into celebration. You can turn it into gratitude. And they're both about the same person, but they're a different feel to them. And the one can drag you down and the other can lift you up. And what mindfulness is try to be lifted up in life as best you can, recognizing the realities of situations. So both in terms of my own business life and my personal life, what I've found is that mindfulness sharpens the mind. It helps you focus on what matters and helps you not fritter away time on what doesn't matter. And increasingly, you're spending more and more of your time on things you love and things that, certainly in my walk of life, helps other people. And that then becomes a positive feedback loop. You get more effective, you help more people, you find it more rewarding, you're happier, so you keep on doing it. And what we don't know is, how good can it get? There's a very interesting array of things that we've probably all know now about positive psychology, Martin Seligman 20 years ago or 30 years ago or so now. But what we do know is that, and I'm on a suicide prevention board for Lanarkshire with the NHS, and so I've looked into that dark area a lot in the last decade or two. But you can't get much worse than that or sadistic hatred. What we don't know, though, is how good can we get? How good can that spectrum of emotions get? Complete altruism, love, ability to handle anything that's negative without, as an old Zen story says, blinking an eye. So the old Zen story was that the samurai are running rampant in a village and they finally get to the village temple and everybody's screaming and there's blood everywhere and they come into the inner sanctum and there's an old stereotype abbot sitting there cross-legged, sort of meditating, and the chief of the samurai runs up to him, pulls his hair back and says, "Don't you know I can chop off your head without blinking an eye?" The old man just opens his eyes and says, "Don't you know I would let you without blinking my eye?" And that whole idea of nothing fazing you. And I don't know, I mean, that's an apocryphal story, of course. I don't know how good you get to that. What I do know was in the early 1960s in the Vietnam War, one of the, probably the equivalent of the Archbishop of Canterbury, in Zen Buddhist terms, set himself alight in the equivalent of George Square. I think it was in Saigon. And he did it as a protest against the government's corruption and oppression of its people. And he literally got people to pour petrol on him and burn him alive as he meditated. There's a report in the New York Times, this is worth reading, where the person says, all around him were screams and horror while he just sat there meditating till he fell down and his body was turned into carbon. And so right through the pain, he was still focusing on that. Now, I've never tried this and I would recommend you don't try it at home. But that's where I'm interested in. How happy can a human being be? How altruistic can a human being be? And how much the mind requires a self-discipline and a sharpness, but still a warmth of heart to be able to be practically helpful as best you can be in your own life and for those around you. And the way you develop it, as I'm sure you all know, is through what we call practice, mindfulness practice. It's just what I did, breathing in, breathing out. The mind says, oh, this is boring. You say, oh, let the boredom go. Breathe in, breathe out. The mind says, you've got other stuff to do. Let it go. Breathe in, breathe out. And what you're doing is training your mind to be under your control rather than being under its own automatic reactive control. Because the human brain is as automatic a functioning organ as your heart or your lungs. You don't need to breathe in and breathe out. Your lungs do it for you. In fact, if you try not to, your lungs will eventually force you to breathe in and out. As we all know from as we were kids and you went under in the bath, you went under the water and see who could stay under for longest. Then all of a sudden you have to come out and burst out. Likewise, your heart beats without you having to guide it, without you having to try and control it. The brain does the same thing. We have evolved to have an automatic reactive brain. And what the development of mindfulness and the part of the brain called prefrontal cortex and the neocortex, which is about the ability to control the brain, the ability to control our thoughts and reactions, comes into play, and we can develop that side of the brain. We can develop that quality of noticing, assessing whether what's in our mind is helpful, useful, going to lead to good outcomes or not. And if they're not, we can learn to let them go. And we can move in a more constructive direction. And then you die, and that's it. You know, you die. That's one of the key teachings of mindfulness, is this is not a permanent arrangement. This is not infinite. You've got a limited time. You're a bunch of atoms that happened by chance, in my perspective, happened by chance to become conscious, become aware of things. And through that, you can have an amazing array of experiences and some inevitable, painful ones. But you have this unlimited potential in every moment, but you don't know how long you've got. And therefore, you need to treat each moment as precious, because that's all you ever really have. So from my perspective, this is about retraining the mind. Now, we've been doing this in recent years with kids in nurseries, kids in primary schools, and they are amazingly adept at this, because children are inherently mindful. How else did we learn a language when we were kids? How else did we learn to discuss things with our parents? How did we learn to use a fork? We had to keep on trying, and that's mindful. You get good at what you keep trying. And what we're trying to do is teach people to be mindful in moments from a very early age, so that by the time they get to adolescence, they know their emotions, they know their feelings. And we can do this, and we should be doing this. Amy was talking about the remit or the purpose of HeadTorch is to bring this quality of good mental well-being into workplaces. But to bring that quality into good work, into workplaces, you have to have minds that are able to do that. And so you need to train the mind and the minds of the people in your workplace to be able to understand when they're causing issues and let it go, understanding when the potential is for them to nurture and help their colleagues. So for me, temporary arrangement, let's get in charge of our own mind, get in charge of our own brain. Don't suppress the negatives, but let them go. Any opportunity to see something good, like looking out and seeing the sunshine, don't just say it's a lovely day and then get back on with something. Spend another 10, 20, 30 seconds on that, and we can move forward progressively with a mind that is continually developing. And life becomes a joy, regardless of losing people you love. So I hope you found that useful and helpful and maybe stimulating. And I'll pass you back over to Amy. Thank you.
Thank you, Martin. That's absolutely lovely. Get in charge of our own brains. That's a tall order. You set us a tall order there, Martin. So Martin has a question for us, and it's this. Who are you when you stop doing? Who are you when you stop doing? So we're going to go into breakout spaces now and have time to discuss that. Angus has just put that question into the chat. Welcome back, everybody. Hope you had a positive discussion, enjoyable discussion. So we're going to open the floor now then to any thoughts or questions around that arose. Anybody want to share anything in your group, from your group discussion, and or any questions for Martin? If you'd like to share something, do feel free to. Yes, Jim.
Hi, Martin. Thanks.
Hi, Jim.
Hi, Martin. Thanks very much. And thanks for the question. So I'd be interested to know what was your intent, if you had one, behind asking that question.
Yeah, that's a great question. my intent was, I think, to try and challenge us or jolt us out of our normal way of thinking about our lives and about ourselves. You know, we are unbelievably driven now to do. And I was saying to Amy and Angus before we started that right now I've got three cats and two rabbits in this house just now. The rabbits are in because it's so cold. But when I look at how animals live their lives, granted pets are not quite in nature, but the cats spend hours resting. They spend hours just being, and they are so content when they're doing that. And then you compare it with us scurrying about everywhere, doing this, a lot of stuff we're doing so that we can sort of say to ourselves that we've achieved something or we've done something. And it just strikes me that much of that is just a poor way to live. We should rest better. We should relax more. And obviously we can blame our culture, we can blame our society, but we do have degrees of control over it. And when Amy asked me, you know, to pose a question, my first thought was, yeah, who are you when you stop doing all that stuff? And my own answer to myself was, I'm at peace when I'm not doing all that stuff. And when we had a really interesting conversation with Patricia and Drew, and Drew was talking about being at peace, walking his dog, and Patricia said, yeah, in nature, she's at peace. And that's a kind of doing, not doing, taking the dog for a walk, being in nature. And we owe that to ourselves, I think. And we have a duty to whatever, whether you think it's chance, fate, the universe, God, whatever created us, to actually use this properly. And I think part of that is not doing stuff all the time. So that was my reason.
Thank you.
Thanks, Martin. Somebody else want to share any of your...
Unfortunately, a serious question, or a technical question for Martin, and that is Martin, how do you relate mindfulness or compare it with meditation?
It's a fairly regular question. Mindfulness is how you live. Meditation is how you get to be good at how you live. That's my take on it. Meditation, of course, there's hundreds of different types of meditation in different spiritual or religious or philosophical traditions. But in the secular sense that I live within, then it's straightforward. It's training my mind in order that I am in control of my thoughts as much as possible, moment by moment, in order that I can live as rich a life as possible. Now, the living the rich life is being mindful. The meditation is honing the mind in order to be mindful. Now, that is how the Buddha taught it as well 2,500 years ago. Although I'm secular, I got taught initially for the first 6 years by Tibetan Buddhists. And the script on this is amazing. It's 2,500 years old. And the Buddha called it the setting up of mindfulness. And he explained the classic standard meditation. And he said, you're doing this in order that you might be able to live your life mindfully. And he actually put it that way. And I think that concurs exactly with modern neuroscience. That's what it tells us. And that's certainly from my perspective, how I live my life. It's a bit like football training, you know, or sports. You can train Monday to Friday, but you're not training Monday to Friday for no reason. It's so that in the Saturday you can actually go and play a game of football well. It's kind of pointless if you just train all the time and you never play the game. Similarly, there are people who meditate and all they do is they get a nice 20 minutes of peace or half an hour of peace, and then they run a harem scarem life for the next 23 hours and then you repeat. You know, that's not the point. The point is to get clear mind, focused mind, happy mind, and an altruistic mind, in my view.
Fabulous. Thanks, Martin. Jeannie, you've got your hand up there.
I was just going to share a comment from our group, if people don't mind me sharing it. The comment in discussing the question that it's a great leveler, of people, that doesn't matter where you are in an organisation or pecking order in your family or whatever. When you're just you, we're all just being our human beings, and sometimes that perhaps gets forgotten. So it's just that was something that struck me anyway. Thank you.
Lovely comment. That's a very Scottish, at our best, Scottish egalitarian perspective as well. You know, that it's also said, you know, in the ancient traditions as well, that everyone is equal and everyone has the same potential in life, the potential to live life, the potential to enjoy life. And we are societally a long, long way from that. The cultural mindset is that there are people who are successful and there are people who are unsuccessful. And I think that hinders our potential to be fulfilled.
Absolutely. So if we woke up tomorrow morning, Martin, and the miracle had happened, and in organisations across the globe, people were living mindfully, working mindfully, what would we notice?
I think the first thing we would notice was that people were nothing like as stressed as they currently are. I think that we would notice that people would be much more compassionate, openly so, than what they are. I think we would be much more effective in resolving some of the horrendous issues that we currently have, from climate change and biodiversity loss to the wars that are going on that are crippling so many human beings' lives. I think if we were truly mindful in organisations and across society, we would have not just the intelligence, but the mutual empathy and goodwill to each other to actually end a lot of the, what I'd call just the crap that's going on. We live in a society, without going into a rant, you know, where people go to food banks in order to feed their children. I mean, that is not only, I think, morally obnoxious, but it's also unbelievably inefficient. It shows that as a society, we're not functioning properly. That should not exist. So I think if we were miraculously mindful, then we would resolve the issues that are resolvable, and they're all resolvable. I mean, right now, where my dad was born and taken away to labour camp, that part of what's now the Ukraine, it was then part of Poland, is kind of under threat from ancient enmities and fears and paranoia between Russia and Ukraine and Russia and the West. And it's all in the mind. None of it is real. It's all imagined, and that makes it real. And if you can make enmity and fear and war real, you can also make resolution and peace real. They're just facets of the mind. And it's, I think, when the great tragedy is that we're not there yet. You know, you just see the people coming over, Syria, Yemen, Libya, you name it. And it's all avoidable. But you need human minds to be in the right space to do it.
Sure. And we'd obviously make a ginormous impact on mental health within workplaces.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favourite quotes of all time is from Noel Coward, the musical director, film director and actor. And he said, work is more fun than fun. And now that is a happy human being that can say that.
Yeah.
You know, it's an astonishing thing. And we should be able to feel like that, or at the very least to feel that work is all right to go into. And I don't think we're there with that either. But of course, life is complex. It's not just work that's causing the problems. There are relationship problems, there are family problems, there are financial problems, poverty problems in life. But work should be uplifting. work should be something that you go home from and think, yeah, that was a day well spent. And it's sad and tragic if you think that people can spend 40 years of their life, 40 hours a week, for what, 45 weeks a year, and not being happy in that time, or being moderately up and down in that time.
Absolutely, yeah, finding our purpose. Martin, thank you very much. I'm just going to hand over to Angus. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Unless there's any other questions.
Martin, that was great. Thank you very much. We try always to get, if you like, a very varied group of guests. And, you know, that was really fascinating, actually. This morning, I went for a walk before I started work. And I watched the sunrise and I looked over Glasgow and I just spent some time just in the moment. And it was a great way, to start the day. So, yeah, I think it's really interesting what you were saying there. I love the bit about, you know, stop the negatives from getting out, yeah, and sharpen up your focus and your mind. So thank you very much. We really do appreciate it.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
Well, thank. Hopefully we'll have you back again.
Thank you.
Yeah. The next First Thursday Wellbeing Hour, that is going to be with, Amy, if you could move the slide on. There we go. Thank you very much. So that is on the 13th of January, 2022. It's at 12 o'clock, 12 noon, and we have Rachel Suff, who is a Senior Policy Advisor with CIPD. And it promises to be a much more work-focused session, but I think it will be really, really interesting to see. So please join us then if you can. Keep an eye out for us on LinkedIn. We do events like this on a fairly regular basis, and we do always post them on LinkedIn. So follow us there if you enjoy what we do. And if there's not any more questions, I think we can say our goodbyes. Okay. Thank you very much, everybody. Great to see you.
Thank you, everyone.
Take care.
Thank you.